Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today I have John Galloway, and I'll tell you about what John's doing at Microsoft, but I'm going to start by saying he's a good friend, an old friend. We worked together at Microsoft, and he was on the very first episode of yet another podcast. Right now, John is a PM with the .NET community team, and he's focused on the Mac. John, how are you?
I'm doing good. It's interesting times. It's great to talk to an old friend. It's good to catch back up with you.
Do you remember that when you were doing the podcast a lot, I would always introduce you by saying, John!
Yes. And I would jump.
I'm thinking of doing that again, but I constrained myself.
Yeah, well.
So you're doing all sorts of interesting and new things.
Yeah, and doing less of some that I used to travel and speak and not doing that lately.
Well, I bet, yeah.
But so, yeah, I'm on the .NET community team, and we've shuffled things around a bit lately. But so that's a team. Scott Hanselman runs the full team. And then the group that I'm in there is, we're reporting to James Montemagno. So that includes like Jeff Fritz is on the team and you know, some other folks. And we're focused more on kind of the super outward focus stuff. And then in the broader team, there's like Myra, who runs the .NET website. So, but, you know, all up, it's all focused on .NET.
It's all the usual suspects, it sounds like.
Yeah, yep. So, and, you know, we're all having to adapt. There's a lot of opportunities and a lot of challenges. You know, a lot of the things we did in the past were more like, hey, I'm going to, you know, prepare this presentation and go travel around and speak about it or whatever. And now we're kind of figuring out how do we work with virtual events and how do we, you know, focus on, I don't know, the enabling community to run events and you know, communicating and all that stuff.
But you could talk to an awful lot of user groups at one time. Mm-hmm. Using Zoom or not Zoom in your case, Teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, and that's one thing that James and I helped with a little bit lately. James also runs a meetup. He runs the Seattle Xamarin user, or I forget what it's called specifically, but it's the Xamarin Mobile, Xamarin Seattle, something or other meetup. And so they did a few virtual events, and then, you know, we've already been doing these kind of remote .NET community stand-ups. And so we kind of were like, hey, how can we package this up and make it so that the .NET Foundation has, I think, about 360 worldwide meetups, and they're all trying to figure the same problem out of how do we do virtual events and how do we, you know, if some of them are like, hey, if we're doing an online virtual event, we might as well invite the world, you know? And so we set up a .NET virtual user group thing, and then we tried out some different tech and settled on this thing called StreamYard that makes it easy to handle live streaming all in a browser. So we're speaking right now on Zencastr. It's kind of like Zencastr for, you know, a live event. So
that sounds great.
Yeah.
And I know that you're doing some live events through Twitch.
Yeah. So some of that came up. We've been doing this .NET community stand-up thing. We started with the ASP.NET community stand-up, and we've been doing that for 5 years now, which is pretty crazy. So that was every Tuesday. And we started, that was way back on Google Hangouts, I think, whatever it was called. And then over time, we expanded, and we were doing them using Channel 9 Studios, and we had this whole kind of sophisticated setup. And then over time, we looked at how could we kind of not, so James again, so James and I've worked on a lot of stuff lately. He was like, why don't we do this for other .NET things, not just ASP.NET? So we set up a Thursday show for them, and that focused on other parts of .NET. So there's the Visual Studio one, there's the mobile one, there's languages and tools. And so the idea is those are on Thursdays, and then the ASP.NET one queued on Tuesdays. And as part of that, we also started streaming to both YouTube and Twitch at the same time. And that was kind of my first introduction to Twitch. And Twitch, like originally and kind of majority still, is this gaming platform, you know, where people would live stream playing video games. And I was kind of like,
which is the world's weirdest.
I totally don't get it. Like, there's millions of people that want to watch someone else play a video game. Now, I'll watch YouTube when I'm stuck in a video game and I need to see how to, you know, what's the cheat to get past something. But I normally wouldn't sit around and watch someone play video games, but people get into it. And then I also, for the most part, wouldn't understand people wanting to watch someone else program. Except over the years, I guess I watched like Damian Edwards did, mm-hmm. Annie Betts did. some other people have been doing this. But so of course, with the quarantine, it's gotten a lot more popular. But so we started live streaming to both YouTube and Twitch, and we weren't sure if people would move from one to the other, but we found out it just kind of doubled our viewership.
Wow.
Yeah. So then we got people watching on both shows. And then over time, we've kind of learned, like, you know, some things that, like, I work with Jeff Fritz and he's constantly on Twitch. I haven't for the past few months, but I did spend enough time to get to affiliate level, which is kind of like the first little, you know, thing. You've got a few viewers. And it's interesting. It's really different. I'm used to presentations where you spend some time kind of crafting your talk and you put together your slides and you put together your demos and you make sure it'll fit in an hour and you figure out what you'll do if something goes wrong. I'll switch over to here. If I lose internet, I can switch to this. If everything goes wrong, heck, you know, maybe I'll have like some screenshots or a video, you know, like, so you really carefully plan it out. And with live streaming programming, it's very different. You're just writing code in front of people and they expect to see you, you know, Google things and get on Stack Overflow and stuff. But getting that balance right.
I was going to ask you, are you allowed to look up things while you're going?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously you don't want to just, and I've had some where I went in unprepared and then I learned, like, no, I really need to prepare it at a certain level. But I did have some, for instance, there was this new thing called Project Tie from the .NET team, and it's focused on making things like Kubernetes and Docker and microservices set up easier. And they have some really cool tutorials where you just follow along and it's like a cookbook, like your standard, you know, tutorial. And I went through and did those live on my Twitch stream. And I found out later that David Fowler and other people of the team were watching those Twitch streams and going like, no, don't click there. Oh, shoot, we got to fix the docs. And so they actually updated their docs based on all my mistakes. So I was their, you know, like test user. They got free user testing.
That's brilliant. I like that.
Yeah.
Let me switch you around if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because you said your focus is on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very interested because I'm working on a large Xamarin Forms project, large by some definition.
Mm-hmm.
And a few times I've tried to bring it up on the Mac in Visual Studio for the Mac and had a fair amount of trouble getting it to work. And of course, my patience level is about 6 minutes. So tell me about where you guys are at with VS Mac and what else is happening with the Mac and .NET.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, you know, my experience with .NET on Mac goes back to, like, you know, when .NET Core started, the idea was like, hey, we're going to design this so it's cross-platform. And I would call it an air quotes feature. Like, it's air quotes cross-platform because, yes, the idea was, yeah, it could work cross-platform, but we really, when we did our demos and stuff, it was, we do 90% of the presentation and then we'd pop out our MacBook and we'd say, and here's the same thing running on a Mac. And then we'd close the MacBook and you know, that was it. Like, and we weren't really doing day-to-day development on a Mac. And there were a few oddballs, but for the most part, it was kind of a, you know, you could sort of do this. And I think the real main thing, so I've been mostly working with Visual Studio for Mac, and that has an interesting kind of background. As you know, the original focus was all on Xamarin development, and over time, the kind of goal is to make that like the premier .NET development environment for Mac. So of course, you can use VS Code, you use Writer, you use Vim, whatever you want, and you know, we want all those things to work well, and we also, the VS for Mac, we have the most control over, and we want to make sure that that's as good an experience as possible. So the main kind of things we see people working on there, of course, Xamarin, and then also two other areas are Unity and ASP.NET Core. And ASP.NET Core is kind of one of the areas where it's like, that's the most straightforward to do cross-platform because you're working on browser-based applications. You're deploying very likely to, you know, Linux or Docker. And so it's a lot more OS agnostic.
Just as an aside, why would you be deploying to Linux?
Well, as opposed to Windows, I think there's a few reasons. One is obviously cost. Even with cloud-based and Azure or whatever, Linux is less costly. There are some other features, like for instance, Docker. There is Docker support on Windows, but it's kind of much more fundamental built-in thing on Linux, and being able to deploy to tons of, you know, like if you're building a microservice application, deploying to Docker and Kubernetes, you can really scale that out out and have a lot more control that way. Docker is also great for things like repeatability. So if I build something and have a Docker container, I can set that up with CI/CD and testing and have it very, you know, I can be sure that this Docker container, I can deploy it anywhere and it's going to continue to work. So that's, there's, you know, some of those sorts of things.
Yeah. Okay. Let me bring you back to Xamarin on Visual Studio Mac. Has there been a lot of development there, a lot of changes there that I need to go back and pay attention to?
You know, honestly, I am not an expert on Xamarin. I do know some about it, but that's an area where there's a whole Xamarin team, and the Xamarin team kind of covers a lot of that. So I do know that there are some newer features that they've done, such as like hot reload. There are some newer features in VS for Mac for Xamarin development, but it's not something that I'm, you know, a super expert on. I do know that they're continuing to crank away on Xamarin Forms and Xamarin Form support. I think that's some of the, you know, newest excitement there is that, and then also just support for newer features as they're released, iOS and Mac OS features.
I claim all development on Xamarin Forms because 5 years ago, I wrote an article on my blog called What I Would Do If I Were Miguel de Casa. And in that, I said I would put all my chips on Xamarin.
It's funny because we did a Herding Code podcast where they announced Xamarin Forms, and Joseph Hill and Miguel were on it, and they were talking about, you know, like very lightweight, just for a line of business. We're not, you know, and I was like, I would do it kind of like you just said. I would do everything in Xamarin Forms, like make that if somebody needs to dig down to a lower level, do it, but just make a cross-platform, you know, like standard development thing, because people are dying for it. So
it's really interesting because when it started, just as an aside, but when it started, the key selling point was that iOS would look like iOS and Android would look like Android. And then all of a sudden there became this kind of movement to have everything look the same. Isn't this cool? iOS and Android look identical. And so it's been sort of a 180 degree turn on that. Yeah. But obviously with Xamarin Forms, you can do either.
You know, I disagreed with that personally. I know some people feel very passionately that it's really important that things look native. I honestly didn't care about that much. I mean, I don't want an app on my Android phone to feel like some weird iOS app because it feels weird. But I think for the most part, your apps don't have to, they're not showing super OS specific stuff. And I do feel like over time that they're all kind of converging anyways. Like it's pretty hard to tell. Watching the latest Apple keynote and seeing all these features, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's what was in the last Android release. And that was in this. And this feature, they're going to ship that in the next one because they just saw you build it on iOS. It feels like they're very similar at this point.
I think that's right. So bring this all together and help me understand where .NET is and where it is in terms of MAUI as well, and what MAUI is for folks
who don't know. Okay. So again, and this is an area where I kind of know, but I'm not a super expert, so I'll do my best. .NET is working towards .NET 5, which will come out this coming November. And then the next follow-on is .NET 6. So a few things there is it's not being called .NET Core 5 and .NET Core 6. We're just kind of standardizing on the name .NET, so .NET 5. And a reason for that, and it's kind of funny, then people are like, where'd .NET Core 4 go and all that? And the general idea is just to make it very clear, this is the future. There's not going to be a separate .NET Framework 5 release or whatever. There are still plenty of businesses that were confused, and they were looking, and they'd say, well, should we build this in .NET Core 3.1 or .NET Framework 4.8? Well, let's go with the bigger number. And, you know, so this is to make it very clear. This is the future. .NET 5 is, and then .NET 6, et cetera. Another thing with that is that they're...
At least for the next hour.
Well, I mean, so the goal is that this really is a long-term strategy. And we're saying we're not going to keep making it up as we go along. This is our, you know, future plan. It's based on similar things that they've done with like Ubuntu or Node, where they alternate every other year, and every other year is a long-term support release. And so .NET 6 will be a long-term support. And what that means is you can build, you're supported in production and everything with .NET 5, but when .NET 6 comes out, we expect you to update to .NET 6, and we're designing it so that there aren't big breaking changes. It should be, we're expecting everyone to move from .NET 5 to .NET 6, so we'll make it as easy as possible. And then once .NET 6 ships, the goal is that is long-term support. So I forget exactly how long that is. It's like 3 years or something, but it's supported for a while. And then it alternates. So the idea is generally like bigger long-term feature. For the most part, the big crazier features would ship in the every other year, and then the long-term support is super baked.
Got it.
And then, so part of the reason I mention all that is because .NET Maui, which I've been told I need to always say .NET Maui because of branding or something, but it's and you'll notice if you read like the blog posts, it's never just Maui. It's always .NET Maui. So .NET Maui stands for, what is it? I got to read. It's I scrolled off of this. It is.
Nobody can remember what
multi-platform app UI. Some people love this and some people hate it, but it's .NET multi-platform app UI. And so the idea of this is kind of taking the Xamarin Forms feel and making it multi-platform. So that's Android, iOS, macOS, and Windows. So this is something that we've been, wanting forever, is write once, run anywhere, desktop, client apps. And then there's some other simplicities here where, like, currently when you build a Xamarin application, you have your like Xamarin Forms app, and then you have a Mac app, and you have an iOS app and a Windows app, and it's confusing. And the idea here is to really kind of standardize that, so you have just one .NET MAUI application. And, if you need to get in and customize for one specific platform, you can, but you really shouldn't need to.
And are we continuing to write in XAML and C#?
Yes. So what that means is there, for a lot of people that are really comfortable with XAML, you can totally do that. And there are a lot of developers that have a lot of, you're great with Xamarin Forms. Hey, take that experience and build, client applications, run on all those platforms. There's also some support for some other things if you want to do them. So one is that there is a new programming model available too. And I think they're still figuring out the name for it, but basically there's this, it's a fluent C# UI definition. So you can write, you can write things like new button and then lambda goes to whatever, and you can write it in C#. And it's inspired by like Elm and some other platforms where it's already been pretty popular with developers. So that is this MVU style of development.
Would that still be Xamarin Forms just written in the fluent C#, or would that be a separate?
Nope, that's it. And then only related because it's another way of writing things that run in different places is there's Blazor, and then there's also Blazor Mobile Bindings. And Blazor Mobile Bindings is an experiment that's not committed yet, but they're planning to run it at least through November and see how it goes. And the idea with Blazor Mobile Bindings is you're actually writing in Blazor syntax. So this is the HTML style. And then it still works under the hood with all the Xamarin Forms stuff. So, and that is for people that are more like me that just kind of generally like I can stumble my way through some XAML, but I'm really like more comfortable on HTML. And that includes like I can use CSS as well. I can use the standard Blazor like event code and those sorts of things. So those are the main kind of areas for writing those native experiences.
Well, first of all, I'm very disappointed to hear you say that, since you and I lived in XAML.
I know. I can do XAML, and there's some beautiful things about XAML. And then there's a few things where it's like, this is weird. Some of the areas where you use some of the styling and some of the overwriting and things like that, I guess maybe it's Stockholm syndrome or something, but I've suffered through learning HTML and CSS, and that's more of how my brain works. So. Yes.
Are there designers for any of this?
Yes.
I want Blend.
Well, so
Blend?
Yeah. So it was Blend. It was Blend.
Yeah, I want that.
So I think the idea is that that's going to be in the Visual Studio experience. Yeah. And I'm, again, this is veering into the John's just making stuff up range, but it's going to be more the Xamarin developer experience. And it's just going to Xamarin Forms developer experience and then work in a lot of places. And, well, you know, great. Yeah.
How come I get the feeling that there's an undertone, at least among some people, some Xamarin programmers, that they're wary of MAUI? Why would that be?
Yeah. I think that some people just, and these are guesses mostly for me. I think some people really deeply identify with being a Xamarin developer and they feel like that's going away. And I honestly feel like it's more like Xamarin is graduating and it's growing up and it's won out as the .NET cross developer experience. So I feel like as a general .NET developer, I feel like this is a big win for Xamarin. It takes it from kind of a fringy sort of awesome, but not a whole lot of people use it, to a potentially right applications that run all over the place, you know? So I think that may be part of it, is that people feel like Xamarin as a name and an identity and all that is kind of going.
I get to, instead of being a niche Xamarin Forms programmer, I get to say I'm a .NET MAUI programmer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And I think that there are some things, and this gets into the more like people that are diehard developers that are very platform specific, but I've heard some people say there's this feature that's in Xamarin that I love and I don't see it on the roadmap for .NET MAUI. I think that that's not going to be for most cases. And also I feel like in some ways by extending it out to ship with .NET 6, that gives more time to hit, you know, the real important features for everyone.
So MAUI is set to go with .NET 6. And am I right? That's the end of 2021, like November 2021.
Yeah, but I have to correct you again. It's .NET.
.NET.
I'm the branding police here. So yes. So the idea is it's now there's going to be previews and there's going to be, you know, a lot of stuff in the meantime until the official ship. But the official ship for it is is .NET 6, November 2021. And part of that, you know, is really, you know, like just like everybody, Microsoft was affected by several things, but with COVID, you know, and there was shuffling around things. There was also, you know, there's other features that DevDiv is working on, and there's just resourcing and who works on what kind of stuff. And in order to like ship something really solid and that was really going to work, instead of like how terrible would it be if .NET MAUI ships and it's not good, and this is kind of our one big shot to like ship a cool cross-platform UI. So I
won't say anything about it.
Yeah.
Not a word.
I will say this has been a challenging time to be just a professional anything. Microsoft has been incredibly awesome to work with lately. They've been super understanding. They're very remote friendly. Everyone has shuffled things around very, very well. And yet it's still super hard to, you know, there's challenging things when looking at, you know, what can we ship when and stuff. And there were things where we had to reshuffle roadmaps and things. So.
Right, right. Well, yeah, COVID has certainly impacted everything. Mm-hmm. But if you're coming out November 2021, hey, you know, the virus might be done by then.
Well, yeah. And, you know, also this gives us time to, like, as some of these developers are, you know, maybe working on other projects and being able to shuffle back in. And it gives time for the community to give real solid input on the previews and what features they need and those sorts of things. So
let's circle around back to the Mac, because that's where you're spending your time. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. I'll be honest. I'm living a bit of a double life because I do some things I still run on Windows. Some of my like productivity apps, and also like when I'm doing like live streaming, I'll run OBS on Windows. Even if I'm live streaming my Mac, I use a capture card. Generally, it's just a smoother experience to run OBS on Windows. So there's some of that kind of like big beefy desktop things that I run on Windows. All my development is on Mac.
Mm-hmm. You need a fully tricked out iMac Pro.
Yeah, is that the trash can cheese shredder one?
That is the old
Mac. Oh, right.
The iMac Pro is the all-in-one machine. Mine has 64 gig of RAM, but you know, I went low. I only went with 10 core, but it's a killer machine.
I have a pretty
developing great.
I have a pretty decent MacBook myself, and you know, I was like, like, as part of that, I was like, well, I need a MacBook, because at the time when I got it, I was like, I'm going to be traveling around to all these different, you know, conferences and speaking on them, you know, on my MacBook, and it's just sitting on my desk. I mean, I'm working on it, developing, but
right.
Yeah. So as far as like development experience on Mac, I'm using Visual Studio for Mac. I'm running the internal previews most of the time. I've been doing, for the most part, I've been doing a lot of the ASP.NET Core. They added a decent amount of support for ASP.NET Core, all the scaffolding for, you know, Razor Pages and MVC and, you know, other features for that. There's Blazor support. So like Blazor WebAssembly and server side, I've been working with that. And I've done some other kind of general things. You know, I have done some like Xamarin and Unity development, but the most part, like some of the newer things, and then also some of the areas where I can test out the most and give the best kind of input to the team is that kind of ASP.NET and Blazor stuff, where I can say like, hey, I would expect this, and this is how it works on Windows, and I expect, you know, here's something we need to improve on for the VS for Mac side.
So are we looking eventually at some level of parity between VS for Mac and Visual Studio for Windows?
Well, I feel like that's an interesting question, because VS for Windows goes back decades, right? I mean, there's some stuff, there's code in there that goes back to like Visual Inner Dev. Some of it is not actually wonderful code. Like there's some things in there that are support for, you know, Windows Forms controls or, you know, web form controls or things like that, that are based on some weird COM internals on Windows and stuff. So it depends what people are looking for in parity. I think a good amount of it goes to kind of choosing what are the key scenarios that you're actually going to get some value out of. So the kind of main areas that we're looking at are like, you know, especially .NET Core, ASP.NET Core, Xamarin, and Unity. I don't think there's ever going to be a day where you're going to open up Visual Studio for Mac and go like, I can't tell that this isn't, you know, Visual Studio for Windows. Because, and it's, some of that is honestly stuff where probably if they were building Visual Studio for Windows out of the blue today, they wouldn't build that again this time. So, you know, and they have done a decent amount of work to do a few things for Visual Studio for Mac. One is to share code with Visual Studio for Windows. So like, for instance, the editor in the code editor in Visual Studio for Windows and Visual Studio for Mac actually shares common code. And so it's I forget the percentage, but it's really high. It's like percent or something like that, or 90%. It's a very high percent of the actual just C# editor experience. So that means all the Roslyn refactorings and stuff like that, just automatically when they're updated on Windows, they work on Mac as well.
Do you get the same level of IntelliSense?
Yes. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that IntelliSense does, but for the most part, like anything that's like Roslyn driven, it should be the same.
There's another term that Microsoft was using for the step up from IntelliSense that used more of a AI.
There's IntelliCode. And in IntelliCode, they don't have support for it yet. And that's, I don't know. I mean, I liked it when I used it on Visual Studio for Windows, but I haven't like been dying like, oh no, I'm missing it on Visual Studio for Mac. I definitely would like to see it there. I'd love to see, you know, so there's those kind of core feature areas. And then I would love to see also just the editor, like any editor features come over. One other area that you're also going to see differences between Visual Studio for Windows and Visual Studio for Mac is some intentional things that are focused on actual platform support. So we want, for instance, an example is accessibility. So the Mac OS has some great built-in accessibility features like VoiceOver. And so Visual Studio for Mac supports that. And there are some other areas that are, you know, specific to Mac OS that we want to make sure light up and work well there. So there, that's also like a caveat, you know, when we're saying like feature parity, that's an area where we're like, we want it to have features you'd expect out of your standard Mac OS app.
Let me say a word that may make you hang up, Uh-oh. Which is be sharper. How much Obviously, ReSharper does not run on the Mac.
But so Rider does. So, Rider does. Okay. Yeah, so JetBrains makes Rider, and Rider uses, there's a lot of features shared. Rider is a fantastic program, honestly. It's really cool. There's things that Rider does better than VS for Mac. There's things that VS for Mac does better than Rider. It's really kind of up to people. As I mentioned earlier, my focus is .NET on a Mac, and I'm not selling Visual Studio for Mac. We do feel like, and I work a lot with the Visual Studio for Mac team, because we do feel like we want to make sure, to whatever extent we can, we want Mac to be a great experience for .NET developers. So that includes both making .NET itself work well, and it also for the IDE that we do control, Visual Studio for Mac, making that experience as first class as we can. So that's really at the end of the day, like we want if developers are using .NET on a Mac and they're using Rider and they're happy .NET citizens and very likely deploying to Azure or using other Microsoft products along with it, that's a good thing. So I think a lot of the whole kind of cross-platform .NET has had this whole kind of people run .NET on Linux, but there's a lot of Linux on Azure also, or there's a lot of, maybe they're using other Microsoft services. And even if they aren't, in general, a lot of people, it helps the whole ecosystem out. So, yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. It's always kind of one of these, treading and living in a few different worlds sorts of things. But, I mean, Rider's a great product, and I, I'm friends with people that work at JetBrains, and I'm a fan of what they're doing. And I think it's a good thing for there to be a non-Microsoft .NET IDE on Mac. And, for one, it's going to push Visual Studio for Mac to keep working hard. And it's also, I feel like it's better to be able to tell an open source developer or a Mac developer, you can use .NET. It's open source. You download it. You can buy Rider from JetBrains, and Microsoft never gets a penny from you, and that's okay. that's real true open source.
That is astounding. Having been at Microsoft during the dark years, it has certainly changed a lot.
It flips things on its head. Yep.
Before I let you go, tell me about your live programming on Twitch and what you're doing with that.
So I have done a few different things. I went through, I told you I went through those Project Tai tutorials. I have done some things with the Blazor progressive web application. So those are, it's a Blazor application you can install on either on your desktop, on when you're working on, Windows or Mac OS, or on your phone for those that have PWA support. I think one that's most limited there actually is iOS. They kind of block off a lot of features, but in general, that's pretty neat.
And what's
that's
PWA? Actually,
it's a progressive web app, and it does some cool things that, and Blazor, the Blazor WebAssembly templates include this built in, and it does some really cool things like offline support. It does sync support. So the idea is the one that I was working on my stream is a to-do application. And so I can create to-do apps. And then let's say I'm on a plane and I have this thing pinned on my phone. I can open it up on my phone and I can add some more to-do items. And then when I hit the ground and my phone now has connection, it can sync back up. So there's a lot of things that make it more like running an actual installable application. So that's pretty neat. Yeah, Steve Sanderson did a really cool demo of this during Build this year, where he did something that was a car checker. So the idea is like a rental car, and you return it and you check in all the damage on the car. And, it's designed for that offline support and handles synchronization and some different cool features there.